I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. Well, 2017 was a terrible year for Hollywood as the Me Too movement took down big-time producer Harvey Weinstein and others accused of sexual harassment and even assault. On the other hand, it ended up being a pretty good year for movies with standout performances by women. Frances McDormand in Three Billboards, Sally Hawkins in The Shape of Water, Saoirse Ronan in Lady Bird, Margot Robbie in I, Tonya, Gal Gadot in Wonder Woman, to name just five. If you were a World War II aficionado, there was Dunkirk, The Darkest Hour, Their Finest. If you were looking for a scary, surreal, seriously smart take on horror flicks, class, and race, you could do no better than Get Out. And if you wanted to go big and splashy and nostalgic, you had Star Wars and Thor. And if you were looking for something romantic and funny, there was The Big Sick. Well, today on Radio Times, the best movies of 2017, according to our guests and you. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Already a lot of comments at Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Joining us, as they do just about every year here in our Philadelphia studio, is Neil Oxman. He's a political campaign media consultant with a campaign group here in Philadelphia. This year, he saw 177 movies. Congratulations, Neil Oxman. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty.
Nice to have you with us. And also with us, Gary Thompson. He's film critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News. And Gary, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Good to be here.
I don't want to spend the whole time talking about the Me Too movement, but it is interesting to look at what the Me Too movement has done or is doing in Hollywood, Gary, but also the fact that we've got these really standout performances by women actors. And we were talking before going on the air that there are women directors who are making their mark.
Well, it was a momentous year for Hollywood, and not necessarily in a good way all the time. There was a time there that Neil and Marty were, I think every 5 minutes it seemed, we were getting fresh, sordid revelation that provided yet more evidence of how badly women can be treated in the industry. The flip side of that is that I think there's some really positive things happening. I actually had done a couple stories this year on the number of women I've seen directing. I took the time to count. It was 36 movies that I saw directed by women. That's woefully...
Is that a record?
Well, that's woefully short of half, but it's a good number. I've been watching movies for 30 years. It's double or triple what I would normally see in the course of a year. I have two of them on my list. I know Their Finest and Lady Bird. But it's not just a matter of artistic merit, although they're proving what we already know. Right. Patty Jenkins, if you give a woman a project like Wonder Woman, she can do a great job. We knew this, but it's helpful to have the evidence, I guess. But it's more than just an artistic issue. It's also a labor issue. I talked to Zoe Lister-Jones this year, directed a movie called Band-Aid. One of the coolest things that she did was make a commitment to hiring a 100% female crew. She couldn't do it in every case, especially some of the technical jobs. In those cases, though, she had a male technician mentor a female apprentice. Teach her how to do that job. And she said that turned out to be the most rewarding experience that she had on the film, which, by the way, is very funny. It's worth watching.
Band-Aid.
Right. Because the relationships that developed between the men and the women were great. And the women learned a skill that they can now use to have hopefully a lifetime of employment. So there are some good stories out there and some good things happening.
Neil, you saw 177 movies this year.
170 so far. 170
so far. Is that a lot for you? A little for
that
you?
That is the fewest I've seen since 1982.
And why is that?
Because either I'm horribly, horribly depressed or I have a life. I think it's the latter for the first time in years. Just the happenstance of I used to go to lots of movies twice. I don't do that very much anymore. I only saw one or two movies twice this year. And I have a dog. And so, I just, and a woman I'm dating.
Well, there you go. Ooh, tantalizing. Well, let me play a scene from The Big Sick. And I have to say this was on all of our lists. And then we'll share our list afterwards. This is The Big Sick, written by Kumail Nanjiani. And he plays a version of himself in the film. And here he is with his girlfriend named Emily, played by Zoe Kazan. She happens to be white. He's Pakistani. And she stumbles onto a cigar box filled with pictures of Pakistani women. And Zumail has to explain his parents' desire for him to be in an arranged marriage.
You know how we have arranged marriage in my culture? These are those women.
These are women in Pakistan who want to marry you?
They're not in Pakistan.
You've met these women?
Just with my parents and stuff. We haven't, like...
But you're not serious about this, are you?
It's my mom's thing. I just go along with it.
So what does your mom think about you and me, then? She doesn't know about me, does she?
No. And Lee...
Just of red flags. Oh, my God, I'm so stupid. You ducking my parents. Oh, my God. The two-day rule. No, seriously, red flag after red flag. You're such a liar. You lie to me. You lie to your parents. And those are just the people you like. Is there someone that you're not lying to? I'd love to meet them, because then I could tell them what a liar you are.
You know what? You didn't tell me about your divorce until recently, so you were hiding something, too.
My divorce does not mean that our future is impossible. It actually means the direct opposite. I'm not hiding anything from you, okay? I'm an open book. Do you want to know what's in my cigar box? Stickers. Stickers and stamps.
Aren't you a therapist? Aren't you supposed to be good at handling
Where
this kind of...
Where are my shoes?
Aren't you supposed to be, like, able to deal with this better than you are right now?
I am expressing myself.
A scene from The Big Sick, and a pretty autobiographical, written by Nanjiani and his wife, Emily Gordon, based, Gary, in part on their life together.
Yeah, I actually forgotten how good that movie was until I just heard that clip. Yeah, it was, you know what I was in the mood for this year, given how divisive things are in the culture, is a really good melting pot movie that reminds us what, you know, this country traditionally was and can be and is. You know, it's based on his experiences, the son of Pakistani immigrants who were classic American survivors who came here looking for a better life, who worked hard, who found that better life, who are thrilled about the fact that their child is enjoying these freedoms, but they want to preserve important parts of their cultural legacy. He's not as into it as
No, he's not.
And that causes some problems, which the movie does such a good job exploring.
I mean, it's funny and touching, and it is romantic, Neil.
Yeah, no, and it made my top 10 list, and I loved both Ray Romano and Holly Hunter in the movie. I think that they're really terrific in the film.
The other thing, too, that this movie has is such – it's so generous to every character, even the little characters. And this it's sort of referenced a little bit in that clip. There's a great sequence where we get to meet these women who are showing up for these surprise
dinners together, right, with
sure.
the family.
Yeah, and the purpose is to introduce him to these women, and hopefully that would lead to a relationship, which would lead to a marriage. And the whole thing is ritualized because neither he nor, in many cases, the women want any part of it. And there's a great, most of the time, movies would handle these characters as disposable, but they actually take the time to give one of these women a speech, you know, to describe the fact that she's not any more pleased with this arrangement than he is. And I think it's really important. Not only it humanizes those characters, but it's really the first time that we see the cost of him not being truthful with people. And it's the first time I think he's really taking a hard look at himself.
I do want to play another clip. This is from Lady Bird, but let's get your top 10 list or your top whatever list, Gary Thompson.
Sure. It starts with Lady Bird and Big Sick, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, The Post, Their Finest, Florida Project, The Disaster Artist, Molly's Game, Dunkirk, and a local documentary called Quest.
Oh, yeah, we will talk about Quest. How about for you, Neil?
For me, it's Maudie, because I think Sally Hawkins gives the performance of the year in that. Wolf Warrior 2, this Chinese movie, which is Special Forces movie, which is the most patriotic movie I've ever seen. And if you see it, you'll understand why China is conquering the world. It's made almost $1 billion worldwide.
Wow.
A movie called The Nile Hilton, about an Egyptian detective, The Big Sick, The Disaster Artist, and stay till the end of the credits of The Disaster Artist. I went with someone, and we're the only two people who stayed to the very end of the movie, and everybody left, and there's great stuff at the end of the credits. I have coming-of-age movies, a whole category, Columbus, Wonder, and Lady Bird, Three Billboards, I, Tonya, Molly's Game, and my favorite movie of the year was Wind River by Taylor Sheridan, who wrote last year my favorite movie of the year, Hell or High Water, and this year wrote and directed it. It takes place on an Indian reservation, and I think it's an extraordinary movie.
And my list, The Florida Project, Get Out, Three Billboards, The Big Sick, Dunkirk, The Shape of Water, Lady Bird, Wonderstruck, Blade Runner, Jim and Andy, Wonder Woman, and Wormwood. I threw in a couple of documentaries there. Let's play a scene from Lady Bird, written and directed by Greta Gerwig. Christine Lady Bird McPherson, played by Saoirse Ronan, is arguing with her mother, played by Laurie Metcalf. They are arguing in the car.
I want to go where culture is,
but
like
how
New
in the
York,
world did I raise such a
or at least
snob.
Connecticut or New Hampshire,
well,
where writers live in the
get
woods.
Get into those schools anyway.
Mom!
You can't even pass your driver's test.
Because you wouldn't let me practice
the way
enough.
That you work, or the way that you don't work, you're not even worth state tuition, Christine.
My name is Lady Bird.
Well, actually, it's not, and it's ridiculous.
Call me Lady Bird like
Christine.
You said you would.
You should just go to City College. You know, with your work ethic, just go to City College and then to jail and then back to City College, and then maybe you'd learn to pull yourself up and not expect everybody to do everything.
It's so great to see Laurie Metcalf in a movie once again. And I have to say, I had such high expectations on this film because of everything I read about it. I went and I enjoyed it, but I didn't have this feeling this was the best movie I'd seen all year. And yet the more I think about it, the more I really, really like it. And listening to that clip, I like it even more.
I thought there were two standout coming-of-age movies this year. Neil has three, the other one being Call Me By Your Name, Lady Bird. A lot of people, I think, look at Lady Bird as the more conventional of the two, and I would push back on that a little bit because I think that she does, Greta Gerwig I'm talking about,
yeah,
writer and director, some really innovative things, especially at the end. We hear how fraught the relationship is between the mother and the daughter, and she, spoiler alert, manages to suggest at the end that there's been a really profound reconciliation between these two women, and yet she does it in a way that does not have them on screen together,
yeah,
which is really, really interesting. The fact that it's so emotionally satisfying. And I don't think, as I said in my review, no director would let a writer get away with that. But since the director is the writer, it works out.
And it's her first film,
yeah,
as a director.
I've always hated her until last year when she was in a movie.
You didn't like her in Frances Ha?
No. God, I hated her that most more anything. She was in a movie last year with Julianne Moore, directed by Arthur Miller's daughter, what's her name, who's married to
Rebecca Miller.
Yeah, Rebecca Miller, and I liked her in that. But You know who I also love in this movie? The great stage actor, writer, Tracy Letts, who plays her father, who's really terrific. And I thought it was a wonderful coming-of-age movie. And however Ronan says her first name, which you can pronounce that I
Saoirse,
can't.
Well, right. We went to Saturday Night Live.
Yes,
and they did
right,
a whole
exactly.
show about it to get the correct pronunciation.
I saw that. she's wonderful, and the movie is great.
Let me read some comments before we take a very short break here, talking about the best movies that we enjoyed this year in 2017, from Kathy Get Out, from Christine Coco, from Joanne Dunkirk, exclamation point, from Deborah Get Out, from Elena, The Shape of Water, from J.L., Wonder Woman, talking with Gary Thompson and Neil Oxman about some of the movies that they enjoyed this year. And we're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation and more clips as well. And again, you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. You can add to our list here on our email page, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Much more to talk about. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen, talking with Gary Thompson. He's film critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News, and Neil Oxman. He's a political campaign media consultant, head of the campaign group here in Philadelphia, and he's a cinephile or cineast.
Don't say it.
A word I had to look up yesterday, make sure I could say that on the air. And again, talking about the movies that we enjoyed in 2017. A film that was on all three of our lists was the film Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Let me play a clip. And this is Mildred, played by Frances McDormand. And she's confronting the town sheriff, played by Woody Harrelson, about his inability to catch the person who raped and murdered her daughter. And that was about 7 months earlier.
I'd do anything to catch the guy who did it, Mrs. Hayes, but when the DNA don't match no one who's ever been arrested, and when the DNA don't match any other crime nationwide, and when there wasn't a single eyewitness from the time she left your house to the time we found her, well, right now, there ain't too much more we can do.
Could pull blood from every man and boy in this town over the age of 8.
Their civil rights laws prevents that, Mrs. Hayes. And what if he was just passing through town?
Pull blood from every man in the country, then.
And what if he was just passing through the country?
If it was me, I'd start up a database. Every male baby that's born, stick him on it. And as soon as he'd done something wrong, cross-reference it, make 100% certain it was a correct match, then kill him.
Yeah, well, there's definitely civil rights laws prevents that.
Wow, a scene from Three Billboards. Frances McDormand, another incredible portrayal, Gary, of, in this case, of grief and just rage.
Yeah, I'm a
boiling rage.
A big fan of this director, Martin McDonagh. I think I've had his two previous.
In Bruges and what was the other
Seven
one?
Seven Psychopaths. Yeah. Both I think I've had on my top 10 list. He's an interesting guy. He likes to zigzag a lot as a director. And I think sort of what I think he's doing here is he's addressing the subject of this a weaponized anger that's so prevalent in our culture right now. And it's sort of represented here by Mildred, who's McDormand's character. And I think one of the reasons why maybe it's this kind of anger is so prevalent, it can be perversely enjoyable to watch somebody vent if they've got a righteous cause. And that's where we are at the beginning with her taunting the police over the lack of progress, the investigation. But as we go along and her righteousness turns into self-righteousness and then to cruelty, I think he's really forcing us to question why it is we were on her side with some of that behavior in the first place.
Because
very interesting.
You weren't learn more about the sheriff, Woody Harrelson.
And it's also her behavior becomes toxic not just to the community but to her own family. So it really is – he's one of the few directors out there that really likes to challenge his audience that way.
And Sam Rockwell giving
Oh, Sam Rockwell's never been in anything, as is she. She's remarkable. And Woody Harrelson was terrific. And I really liked him this year. He was in – He played LBJ in a movie called LBJ, and he wasn't cartoonish. There's a great scene in where he's talking to Richard Jenkins, who's playing Richard Russell, Senator Richard Russell. I think Woody Harrelson has become a really good actor. Last year he was in this wonderful movie I had on my top 10 list called Edge of 17. Hmm. But I dare anyone to say that Frances McDormand has ever been bad for 1 second on screen, and this acquits her. As it always does.
She seems to really gravitate to these characters that, as you say, Gary, really challenge our perception of them and whether we even like them
or not. Well, I think that one reason why McDonagh selected her for this role, and I think I'm confident saying that because he told me this.
Oh, he did.
Because
well, that helps.
She's the kind of actress you instinctively root for. He wants you completely on her side at the beginning before aspects of her behavior are revealed that we might not find so likable.
Do you see, I guess, Oscar certainly nomination?
Well, it's interesting because this is such a rugged category this year, and a Best Actress are really a tough category. They're going to have a hard time finding just five.
Exactly. She's been nominated for a Golden Globe for this, so it's, I believe. But Gary's right, because you have
Sally, your girlfriend, right? Sally Hawkins?
Well, you have Sally Hawkins for The Shape of Water. You have Jessica Chastain for Molly's Game. You have Michelle Williams for The Money in the J. Paul Getty movie.
All the Money in the World.
Right.
Margot Robbie and I, Tonya.
And I, Tonya.
Right. Which, by the way, is another example. Margot Robbie took that project from the beginning. She produced it. She did all the hiring. She made all the tough decisions on that movie. And there were a lot to be made because it's a really tricky movie. But it's an example of, I think, some of the good things that are happening out there.
Let me read some more comments. An email from Don. Big Sick, great movie. Lady Bird, overrated, nice movie. But storyline seemed disjointed to me. A tweet from Chuck. God's Own Country. A comment from Brendan, the disaster artist, Thor Thor. We'll just leave it there.
Thor 3.
I don't know how to say his last name.
Right.
I saw Thor and enjoyed it, and you did too, Neil.
Thor almost made my top 10 list. The last couple of years, Gary and I have put this New Zealand director, whose last name I can't say, movies on his list. One about a vampire, which was Vampires Called.
What We Do in the Shadows, right. A mockumentary about a vampire sharing a flat in New Zealand.
And last year, one called Hunt for the Wilder People. Neither movie had budgets of more than a few million dollars, and they give this guy a $180 million movie to direct, and he makes a comedy. Yes.
Well, I think what he did was acknowledge
the comedy of Thor.
Yeah, but yes. I think what he did, which was so smart, was acknowledge it. That's what Thor essentially is.
Right.
it's goofy. Let's stop taking it seriously.
Exactly. Versus Robert Downey Jr. In Iron Man 12, you know, and making up the dialogue as you go along. Make a real movie, Robert. Come on.
And by the way, that director, Wyapedi, I think is how you pronounce his last name, also did a lot of this Flight of the Conchords episode.
Oh, yes, which is great.
Fantastic.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Connecting some of those dots there. A comment from Lisa, Get Out. Lisa, let me play a scene from Get Out. This is written and directed by Jordan Peele. Chris is played by Daniel Kaluuya, and he's being given a tour of the house of his white girlfriend's father, played by Bradley Whitford. And here they are talking as they walk by the black staff.
I know what you're thinking.
What?
Come on, I get it. White family, black servants. It's a total cliche.
I wasn't going to take you there.
Well, you didn't have to, believe me. Now, we hired Georgina and Walter to help care for my parents. When they died, I couldn't bear to let them go. I mean,
the boy,
I hate the way it looks.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
By the way, I would have voted for Obama for a third term if I could. Best president in my lifetime, hands down.
I agree.
Yeah.
He's such a smug liberal. I mean, let's just put it out there. I thought it was just a terrific horror flick about prejudice and about privilege with these crazy, crazy scenes going on.
Well, there's kind of a debate, and Jordan Peele has sort of entered into it himself, about whether this is a comedy, is it a horror movie, is it a hybrid of the two. I laughed hysterically.
I thought it was all of the above.
And Bradley Woodward's performance, the gentleman who plays a TSA agent, who the first actor in the history of the world, I think, to play a heroic TSA agent.
Yes, exactly.
But it has a very unique tone, and I think it worked out very well. But I have to say also, my takeaway is that Jordan Peele is a director. I have looked at the guy as a sketch comedy artist. That was never what he wanted to be. That was his avenue to becoming a director. Now he is one, and for not a lot of money, made a $100 million hit, so he can write his own ticket now.
Absolutely.
Blum Productions, which has made all those Purge movies, is now making all the new M. Night Shyamalan movies, made this. This movie cost less than $10 million and has made $280 million worldwide. He knows how to make, produce movies very inexpensively that are, you know, I mean, the Shyamalan movies used to cost a lot of money, and they became unwatchable for a while. And at least the last one was watchable. I don't know if you...
I didn't see it.
Okay. Yeah. This guy knows how to direct. It'll see what happens for his follow-up.
That's Neil Oxman, and he's a cinephile. He goes to the movies a lot, and he saw 170 this year. He's a political campaign media consultant here in Philadelphia, head of the campaign group, Gary Thompson, film critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News, or philly.com, however you get your newspaper.
Yeah.
Gary is there writing about films.
I only have to write it once, though. Thank goodness.
that does help. And you can join us, especially with the picks of the movies that you enjoyed this year. We do want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499.
Marty, I want to ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
As a woman, given what's happened in Hollywood, should there be a life sentence for some of these actors like Kevin Spacey for what he's done?
I think it depends on how he deals with what he's been accused of doing. I think this applies to everybody. I mean, I do think that for a lot of people, there is the opportunity to make amends and to make them honestly and cleanly. And there is, I think, sometimes a rush to judgment that can obviously destroy people's careers. At the same time, when you look at the series of accusations against so many of these people, it does raise serious questions about who they are as a person and whether they deserve, in this case, to be in the movies or not.
Right.
I mean, it's a
tricky thing. What do you think, Gary? I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I'm curious, you know.
Well, one of the questions I've thought about writing about is how do we, knowing what we now know about some of these people, feel about watching the movies that they're in?
Isn't does
it really change your relationship with them? And I thought a lot about Kevin Spacey in this regard, because I one of my favorite movies of all time is L.A. Confidential.
Right.
I haven't seen it since these incidents were brought to light, but it'd be interesting to see how I respond to that. But and one of the other interesting things we were talking about a little bit off the air is All the Money in the World.
Right.
What an incredible thing Ridley Scott did in
a
scant 9 days, taking Kevin Spacey out of a very key role, replacing him with Christopher Plummer. It's amazing he was able to do it, first of all. But I think it also sends a pretty powerful message that you can be replaced.
You just got removed from a movie.
You can be replaced. Right. Harvey Weinstein can be replaced. All these people can be replaced, and probably by people who, you know, will be just as good. Certainly that was true of Christopher Plummer.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think he's probably going to be nominated for Academy Award for what he did, and it was seamless. I mean, you don't really realize – if you didn't know that it happened, you wouldn't have any idea that some – you know, it's like when somebody passes away and they have to reshoot scenes.
It was. He was so good that I was wondering of the possibility of also having him replace Mark Wahlberg in that movie.
We were talking about the fact that Mark Wahlberg didn't quite fit into that movie, which I did enjoy. But let's see what Madeline from Pennsylvania has to say. Madeline, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello.
Hi there. You're on the air.
Thank you. My question was that I don't see anyone making any comments about the movie Loving Vincent, which was probably the most beautiful and dreamy movie I've ever seen. And it leaves you thinking about life of an artist, and I'm an artist, so.
Was that Vincent? Would that be Vincent Van Gogh, Loving Vincent?
Yeah, absolutely beautiful.
Oh, that's great. That's good to know. I'm looking at both of my guests here. And did you see of your 170 movies?
Yeah. No, that's the one with all color and right. No, I didn't see it, unfortunately.
Right. I didn't see it either. But I think this might give us a chance to talk about one of your favorite movies, Maudie, which is also about the life of an artist.
Right. About a woman named Maud Adams, Maud Lewis, a Canadian artist, and who marries a fishmonger played by Ethan Hawke. Mm-hmm. And I just don't get how – I mean, she is just so much better than Sally Hawkins is than she is in The Shape of Water. I mean, I think it's – I really do. And I thought there were a lot of amazing female performances this year, but I thought that was by far the best.
Well, we have a scene from that. Unfortunately, Neil, we don't hear Sally Hawkins in here, but we do hear Ethan Hawke. He plays Everett Lewis. He's a Canadian fishmonger, as you mentioned. He's at a local mom-and-pop store asking the shopkeeper to help him write an ad for a housekeeper. A painter, Maud Lewis, played by Sally Hawkins, overhears this exchange and eventually becomes a housekeeper for Everett. Let's give it a listen.
Well, well, well. Look who's gracing me with their presence today. Can I do for you, Everett?
I'm looking for a woman.
A what?
A housemaid. Looking for a housemaid.
Like the kind of thing we sell.
Am I an idiot? Huh? No, I want to put up a sign, you know. What do you call them? I need you to write it. Huh? You write
a sign?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Looking for a housemaid. Must have her own, what's the word I'm looking for?
Sense of humor?
No. Cleaning tools. Must have her own cleaning tools. I said, gotta do it. Yeah. And then you...
Contact Everett Lewis.
Yes, sign my name. Right. Here, give it to me. Said... Need a hand.
And again, that's a scene from Maudie, one of the films that Neil Oxman, you put on your top 10 list. And it looks like it's directed by Aisling Walsh.
Right. I just wanted to point out.
Thank you, Trine.
Right. Because back to the subject of how many women are directing this year and how many of those movies turned out to be really first rate, this being one of them.
Right.
Also, as regards Sally Hawkins, she's probably going to get nominated, if not for this, then certainly for Shape of Water.
Right.
And oftentimes when that happens, voters are mindful of other work that they've done during this year. And I think this is going to stand her in good stead.
Well, I love The Shape of Water. This is the Guillermo del Toro film. She plays a mute woman, part of a cleaning crew with Octavia Spencer, working in this lab, stumbles upon this mysterious sea creature. It's set during the Cold War. There's just a lot of things that are going on there. But without giving too much away, I just thought it was just a beautiful love story.
Well, it's certainly
improbable
very
and
visually
beautiful.
Is it Beauty and the Beast? I mean, I think it's sort
it's
of
a version,
you know,
of that,
right, with Michael Shannon,
who plays once again a very, 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 very bad guy.
Yeah. You mentioned also Richard Jenkins earlier.
He's in this too,
right? This to me is one of his best roles, and
yes,
he's had
I would
a lot
agree.
Of really good ones.
I would agree. There was just something so comfy and cozy about him,
right?
And it's about outsiders and misfits. And
it is. I have to say, though, as much as I liked it, my favorite Del Toro movie continues to be Hellboy. And it's still my favorite interspecies romance Del Toro movie. So
we're almost up on a break here, but I need to ask you, Gary, there are films that get released, but not in Philadelphia. I mean, they're obviously released
before
the new year.
I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about platforms.
Well, no. I don't know if I'm talking about. I'm talking about Phantom
Academy
Thread,
Awards.
The Post.
These
are films that we here in Philadelphia want to see.
Yeah,
we see the previews,
wait.
But we have to go to Los Angeles or what? New York to see them.
Yeah, and the Post is going to open here on the 5th. The Phantom Thread, the Paul Thomas Anderson movie, has just been moved from the 19th to the 12th, so it's a little closer.
Right, but why? I mean, did they not make enough copies?
No,
I think that it's, first of all, there's a lot of volume movies coming out. They don't have space for everything. They have to open in New York and LA to qualify for awards consideration.
For Academy Awards, they have to play in two screens, one in New York, one in LA for at least a week to be nominated for that year's Academy Awards. And that's why they open, quote, in limited screens.
Right.
And we lose out.
The other thing I thought, I don't know how much time we have, but the other issue which has started to concern me a lot is the platforms like Netflix and Amazon, which are going to be playing such a huge role down the road in how we see movies, have no strategy for how they're handling theatrical releases. So now we're at the point where Will Smith can make an action movie and it won't be released in Philadelphia, New York and LA only, like Bright, which just came out, which I think is just crazy.
So you end up going to TV instead of going to your movie theater.
Correct.
It gets confusing about whether we're watching a TV show or a movie. Well, this hour of Radio Times, we are talking about the movies of 2017 with Neil Oxman and Gary Thompson. Join us at 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen talking with Gary Thompson. He's the film critic for the Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News, and Neil Oxman, a political campaign media consultant here in Philadelphia. He also goes to the movies a lot. He saw 170 movies this year. We've got a lot of comments. I mentioned Lisa with Get Out, and we played that clip. We've also got Eric, Shape of Water, Best of the Year. Thank you, Eric, for saying that. Florida Project, Killing of a Sacred Deer, Thor, Brawl, and Cell Block 99 are great as well. A comment from Nick, Get Out, Lady Bird, Dunkirk, The Shape of Water, Coco, Logan are excellent. A comment from Eileen, Murder on the Orient Express. A comment from Tyler, Wonder Woman, which we haven't really talked about, but certainly quite enjoyable. Gary, one of the films that you picked is The Disaster Artist. And let me play a scene from this. Pretty funny, actually. The script supervisor, played by Seth Rogen, needs to help filmmaker and actor Tommy Wiseau, played by James Franco, remember his lines from the film The Room. Let's give it a listen.
Action! What line? What is line?
I did not hit her. It's not true. It's bullshit. I did not hit her. I did not. Oh, hi, Mark.
Okay.
Action.
What is line?
I did not hit her. It's not true. It's bull. I did not hit her. I did not. Oh, hi, Mark. Scene 112, take 13. Mark it. Action.
I did not hit her. Okay, line.
I did not hit her. It's not true. It's bullshit. I did not hit her. I did not. Oh, hi, Mark.
Take 17, action.
I hit her.
No. Do you want to change the line?
Script is script. Script says same.
You're doing great, man. We'll get there.
Action. 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 Action.
You have to say it loud. I can't hear in here. Say action so I can hear.
Okay.
This is a movie about making one of the worst movies ever made called The Room.
Right. Which, what? And needs to be said, this is an actual guy who made an actual movie, which is reputed to be the worst ever made.
Tom, did you ever see The Room, by the way?
I have not, no. But I saw Justice League. So I feel as though I have.
So you feel like you have.
I feel as though
but
I have.
But you like this, The Disaster Artist.
Well, it's really a showcase for Franco's comic skills. And I think what he really gets about this character, which is so important, is that this guy is utterly fearless, but he also has no idea about how other people read him, which is why the movie turns out to be so eccentrically awful. And I know there are some people who have said, you know, I'm a little bit uncomfortable with the fact that Franco may be making fun of this guy. I don't see it that way at all. I think it's more affectionate than anything else. But I will say also on that score, I had my other James Franco movie that's been on my top 10 list was This Is the End.
And I love that.
And in that movie, James Franco makes fun of another actor whose name is James Franco.
Right.
So in my opinion, he gets a lot of leeway.
Right. He evidently stayed in character as this character, Tommy Wiseau, when he was directing,
right,
which was very unnerving for the 30 friends of his who made the movie with him. But the guy made his money back from making this movie. I always thought the worst movie was supposed to be, what, Plan 9?
Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Or Attack of the Rotten Tomatoes.
How about Mother?
I did not see Mother. So,
Jennifer Lawrence, God bless him.
It started out okay, and then oh my goodness, what a disaster!
I didn't see it. It's he makes me squirm.
Let me see what Tom from Philadelphia has to say. Tom, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, Tom.
There's a movie that I haven't heard about yet from you all, is Slight, a movie about a street magician that begins dealing drugs to keep his little sister and he in their family home and gets in too deep. Anybody see this one?
No. We're all looking at each other now. Sounds interesting, Tom.
Slight. It is real. It's one of my favorites from the whole year, and it's a great movie because in the end he has to use his magic to get out. It's sci-fi. It's fantasy. He's in too deep. And when in the end, it's very gratifying and just a great.
Did
place.
You see it in
the producers of Get Out?
Did you see it in the theaters, Tom?
Yeah, it was at the Ritz. It's actually directed
yep.
by a young man from Lower Merion,
oh.
who's now gone
right.
on, sort of like Jordan Peele, to get another really good job. So we'll be seeing more of them.
That's great. Tom, I appreciate the suggestion, and thanks for calling into Radio Times. And you can call as well. It's 1-888-477-9499. Neil, you picked a John Coltrane documentary called Chasing Train. And in this scene, biographer Ashley Kahn is describing the origins of A Love Supreme. Let's give it a listen.
John Coltrane has set aside some time, and he secludes himself above the garage in his house at Dix Hills, Long Island, to put together what he sees as a suite. He doesn't know how it's going to go. He has some loose melodies, some ideas. A few days later, he comes down the stairs, and as Mrs. Coltrane put it, it was like Moses coming down from the mountain.
Just a small clip Chasing Train.
Coltrane, who spent much of his time in Philadelphia.
Yes,
if you love jazz, you'll love this movie. I thought there were some great documentaries out this year. Gary Love Quest. There was a documentary called Abacus about this small bank in Chinatown in New York that was prosecuted for securities fraud. And I learned more from a documentary called Letters from Baghdad about this woman, Gertrude Bell, who worked for the British Foreign Office in the early part of the 20th century, who literally was the person most responsible for drawing willy-nilly all the lines, the border lines in the Mideast, and have caused lots of trouble, especially what she did in Iraq, which are just artificially drawn. But the Coltrane thing, if you love jazz, go rent this movie.
And you mentioned Quest, and I have to say that the director of Quest and Quest himself was on Radio Times a month ago talking about this film, 10 years in the life of the Rainey family living in North Philly.
Yeah, I think
if you don't kind of fall in love with this family, I think there's something wrong with
it. It's a kind of subgenre of documentary, which is biographical documentary, which we enjoy, well, for lots of reasons. But one, they take really amazing, there are some amazing twists of fate that occur in the movie, which you don't see coming. And the way the family deals with it speaks to their resilience and the importance of family and the importance of family in streets and neighborhoods and city. It's really an incredible story and a very moving one.
I heard your interview. Has that movie been released nationwide or is it just showing here? Do you guys know?
It made some of the film festivals.
Oh, it has? Okay.
And it was shown in Philly, and then it's going to be on, I think, POV on PBS. Right. So it'll have a television viewing audience. But yeah,
And it's still playing at the Ritz.
Oh, interesting.
Coltrane, by the way, was there for a good long run. So people
right.
really responded yes. to that.
I saw now, I don't know if it was a TV show, Gary, or whether it was actually a movie, but Errol Morris's documentary Wormwood, both frustrating and a fascinating investigation into a CIA agent who was part of a mind control experiment that was run by the CIA called MKUltra. He committed suicide, but his son convinced that he was murdered. And it's, I guess, only the way that Errol Morris can do documentaries, which is old footage and recreations and... And that's okay. I'm just looking at you.
Okay,
just
I haven't seen
suggesting
it.
Wormwood, Errol
I'll
Morris.
Check it out.
That's good. Let me play a scene from the Florida Project. And Gary, this was on your list, mine as well. This is a scene. Hotel manager Bobby, played by Willem Dafoe, confronts single mother Hallie, who's played by Bria Venalti. I think that's how you say your last name, about the antics of her daughter and her daughter's friends, and about payment for her long stay at this rundown motel.
It's only second week of the summer and there's already been a dead fish in the pool.
We were doing an experiment. We were trying to get it back alive. That was my idea.
And water balloons thrown at tourists? You can't f*** with tourists.
They didn't tip us.
Are you serious?
No.
Oh my God, this is unacceptable. I failed as a mother, Mooney. You've disgraced me.
Harley.
Yeah, Mom, you're disgraced.
And I'm going to talk to Ashley, by the way. When your friend puts you in charge of her kid, that kid becomes your responsibility. You ain't taking responsibility. And you got that one, too. She's from Futureland, right?
Oh, whatevs. You gotta relax, my man.
You gonna redo my expense reports with your whatevs? Your kid killed my night. I wanted to watch the ball game. You gonna pay me for 3 hours that I gotta work later?
Hey, guys, pay the man for his 3 hours.
I don't have any money.
We don't have any money,
you're out of rich. You haven't given me this week's rent yet.
You don't think I know that, chill.
I love this film. It felt like a documentary to me.
Really good slice of life movie, which for me had a turned out to be kind of an unexpected walk down memory lane. It's set up as this docu-style look at the lives of people in this motel, which caters almost exclusively to low-income people. There's a lot of single moms. They're off working minimum wage jobs, and their kids, as a consequence, are just running wild, running through traffic, setting things on fire, throwing rocks at abandoned houses.
And spitting on people.
And I'm looking at this and thinking, you know, for those of us who grew up in the 60s, this was childhood. This is how we all sort of used to grow up. So that was I got a kick out of that. And also the idea that these kids, if you've got fun things to do and cool places to go, you don't necessarily know or care that you're poor. You don't even think of it in those terms. And this isn't kitchen sink realism. The movie's really fun because you see it for the first hour through the eyes of these children. It darkens a little bit in the second hour when you start to visit the lives of the adults. But even so, that Willem Dafoe role is so good.
Yeah, he's wonderful.
We're talking about how many of the families are single-parent families, especially single mothers. And what he ends up being is like de facto, in a platonic way, the spouse. The husband, the brother, he fixes things. He's keeping an eye on the kids, as you hear. He's helping people with their rent. It's really a great role for him, and he does a really good job.
And I love the juxtaposition of this rundown motel or these motels.
On the fringe of Disney World.
On the
right.
fringe of Disney World. Right. And, they, you know, there's the land of Oz, just kind of off in the distance.
You know, my question is, maybe Gary knows the answer, is how many of the both adults and kids in the movie?
Almost all of them are non-professional
okay,
actors, or at least
right.
they were before they got okay. paid for doing this movie.
Right.
Yeah, I think Willem
Dafoe. Which is why it felt.
And
besides,
Caleb Landry Jones has a small role as his son, but
right.
I think aside from that, they're almost all what you would call maybe found object actors.
Let me read some more emails. One from Simone. The Great Showman. Love this movie, except for Zac Efron not dancing. The introduction thanking the audience for seeing it in the theater was apropos to your conversation. An email from Nancy. Please take a moment to discuss Columbus, a quirky movie, moving, intelligent movie that I fear may be overlooked during award season. I don't know Columbus.
I put it on my as one of the coming-of-age movies. It's with John Cho and Haley Lou Richardson, who was in Edge of 17 last year. And it's a very quiet movie. John Cho's visiting Columbus, Indiana, which has some interesting architecture because his father is a famous architecture lecturer, writer, architect. And it's just about these two people talking and discovering each other. And I love Haley Lou Richardson. I think she's going to be a great actress. And I loved Edge of 17 last year.
Oh, that's good to know. Let me throw out Wonderstruck, this is Todd Haynes' film, which I loved a lot. My husband and I both loved it, about two kids from two different times, separated by 50 years, a girl named Rose running away from her father to find her mother. There's a little boy named Ben who runs from his home in Minnesota to find his father. They end up in New York, and through coincidence and connection, they do find each other. And I thought the actors were fantastic. And my husband had said, you know, his dream as a kid was to live in a museum. And in a sense, part of this movie is about what it would be like to live in a museum.
It was
a museum filled with artifacts.
That was a sweet movie. It was nice.
Is that all? Is that all I get?
Yeah, I would concur. I wouldn't put it on my top 10 list.
But it was a nice movie. Right. No, I mean, it was very watchable and very enjoyable.
Fair enough.
I'm sorry it didn't make my top 10 list.
No, that's okay. You're entitled to your own list. Gary, what's ahead for 2018, and I have to say, probably Neil feels this way as well, The Isle of Dogs, Wes Anderson's film. I've seen the previews maybe a half a dozen times. I'm very excited about this film.
I'm not always the biggest fan of his work, but I love him as an animator. I think the way that he likes to have control over characters' behavior sometimes gets on my nerves when they're human beings, but I think I love Fantastic.
There have to be
Mr.
20
Fox.
Unbelievable people who are doing the voiceovers for this movie. I mean, if you look at, because they run them in the preview, who's doing all the voiceovers that were great. And yes, I he makes quirky movies. I'm glad he has this little place and he plays in his little sandbox, and he's really good.
Yeah. Anything we should look for that you know of, Gary, in 2018?
The Post.
Oh, the
next
Post,
week,
yes.
And Phantom Thread for Paul Thomas Anderson fans on the 12th.
I want to throw in a plug. Go see Gary Oldman in Darkest Hour, where he plays Churchill in the few weeks before Dunkirk and right after Dunkirk, when he becomes when he moves from being First Lord of the Admiralty to Prime Minister.
If you can stand another Dunkirk movie, one movie that I put on my top 10 list was Their Finest, a Lona Scherfig movie about a woman who gets hired to write propaganda movies and World War II London during the bombing. She gets involved in a movie about Dunkirk. Really, it's been overlooked. It's a really nice picture.
Well, Gary Thompson, Neil Oxman, thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times. Monica from Philly says she's struck by the lack of diversity of the films, also our panel, and the movie Get Out is a great example of how African-American filmmakers can make excellent films with few resources. Monica, thanks for that comment. We do want to close things out with some of the music from The Shape of Water, La Javanaise by Madeleine Perrault from 2006. Thanks for joining us.
Mais c'est vous qui l'avez voulu, mon amour.